Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. My name's Lucy Blue and this week I'm talking to Steve Ellis, the licensee of an incredibly well-preserved 17th century Cromwellian vessel, the London. Steve and his team of passionate divers work literally against all odds. It is pitch black, the currents are so strong that the shot line is often horizontal, and the wreck sits on the edge of a shipping lane of the Thames River in London. The word bonkers did crop up a few times when I was speaking to Steve. Let's see what he has to say. Steve, thanks so much. I'm really, really pleased to be able to talk to you about the very exciting wreck of the London. It's really, I'm very honoured that you can find the time to talk, because I know you're pretty busy. I know a little bit about this wreck, but not a huge amount. I believe she's 17th century and that she's located in a really busy part of the Thames. How on earth did they find her?
The wreck wasn't forgotten about, but it came to light when they were doing the pre-dredging work for the Dubai ports. Obviously, they surveyed us and sonar survey the proposed dredging, and it came to light, so it was rediscovered.
Right, okay, that's really interesting. So they had some idea of where she went down, and which year did she go down?
1665.
Right, okay, and so I know it's had a long history with lots of people involved, but were you part of that original discovery, or when or how did you get involved?
I got involved by a chance meeting with Professor Nigel Nayling at Airport Departure Gate. Nigel had a t-shirt on, the Princess Channel Expedition, and me being my nosy self, asked him about that, you know, and he said, yeah, they're working on a Gresham ship, and he asked me why, and I said, well, we dive in the Thames, and he was quite surprised that he said, no one actually dives in the Thames for pleasure. Well, a bunch of us mad people do, and he passed our details on to Historic England, and Historic England approached me to see whether I wanted to be the licensee to the wreck, and wow. And what an adventure it was. You know, I was approached in 2010, so that's when we started to be involved in London.
14 years you've been involved with it. So, I mean, that's a really sort of serendipitous story, isn't it? But why do you want to dive in the Thames? Maybe I should be asking that question, because as we know, visibility is not exactly extensive.
No, the visibility is pretty bleak for the Thames. For Thames estuary, but I'm a local lad. My uncle was an old South End fisherman. We've always had boats in the family, and I love the Thames. I used to walk the mudflats looking for things. I've always been interested in maritime history, especially with the Thames estuary. So yeah, I did know about the London, and I did hear it was become a protected wreck, because I've got 400 positions of wrecks in the Thames, and I thought, oh, that's one I'm not be able to dive. But luckily, I got a license to it, and I must admit, yeah, wow.
That's quite an adventure, as you say. And I guess the big advantage of the silty seabed or riverbed of the Thames is that it is just that. It provides that those conditions that keep all these amazing artefacts in good preservation. And I believe you found, actually, the one thing I need to ask you about is this recent find. You found something last week that sounded really exciting.
Yes, I discovered a bronze cannon, which I've been looking out for ever since I started to dive the site. My very first dive on the site, I came across iron cannons, and the archaeologist said, well, you can't really be seeing iron cannons, because she never had iron cannons as ordnance, but we discovered that they were used as ballast.
So can I just ask, what, I mean, that must have been so amazing. I have to admit, I've worked as a maritime archaeologist for decades, but I've never found something that exciting. What did that feel like, especially as that was your goal? It must have been amazing.
It was fantastic because, to be honest with you, finding the cannon was good, but also it actually proved my theory of a wreck, because reading the Wessex Archaeology report, they didn't have that much time on the site on the initial investigations to actually work out the site because of the conditions of the Thames. So that's what I wanted to set out, was actually to work out what the London was, a big underwater puzzle. And after discovering gun carriages on the site, bear in mind the visibility is really bleak. You know, everyone would say, oh, well, it's easy enough to go down and find a gun carriage. But the gun carriage was still under the silt at the time, and it was me asking Historic England if I could just do a small test bit just to prove my theory about possible gun decking. And working with Cotswold Archaeology, my test bit was my trench I was working in, and not only did I find a gun deck, I found a complete gun carriage, and wow. So I'm starting to get a picture of the wreck, the layout of the wreck, and it was on that dive when I found a cannon. We was going along the site and what's normally buried under the sediment, and I was coming across cannonballs, rope the same diameter as breaching rope, what I found on that gun carriage. Then I found what I thought was a broken remains of a gun carriage's cheek. Moving a metre along, and wow, there's this emerging of this cannon. And I had to get my wife, who was on the site, had to find her, bring her to the cannon, let her feel it.
Oh, that's such a lovely story. Not only did you find it, but you're sharing it with your wife. I think that is so fantastic. God, that's what an amazing thing to do. But it also, so I hadn't realised, so is part of this trying to absolutely verify that this is the London, is that, or are you more trying to verify the layout? And I think it's split into two pieces, isn't it? And just to try and literally feel your way around it.
As an amateur archaeologist and an avocational one, I like the forensic side of archaeology. Where I found the first iron cannons, to me that was the bottom of a hold. The bottom's blown out of it at explosion. She's still coming up in the tide, which ships of that period would do. They'd use a tide to manoeuvre. And the tide's taken the site where the bronze cannon is, taken at 400 metres further up in the tide. And she's gone over on her side. Bit sort of like the Mary Rose. So it's that working out of what's remains. Even on, to be honest, I dived today and I came across more gun decking what's emerging out of a silt. And on the gun decking, there's like marks or etchings. And the thing is, with where it is, it's right near to the main shipping lane. The wreck is emerging out of the silt all the time. And people say, like, you must get bored of diving this wreck. How can you actually get bored when every dive you're coming across things? But the only sad thing about it, after a couple of weeks of being exposed from the surface of a silt, things start to deteriorate. And that's my irritation, to find that we're actually losing stuff from the site.
So is this because it's so close to the shipping channel and it's constantly being sort of eroded away, and that's why? So it's a bit of a race against time in a way then, isn't it?
Well, it's a race against time, but when you're dealing with bureaucracy where everything goes so slow, we between us and the Nautical Archaeology Society, we're asking permission if we can just recover the things what we feel at risk, to be able to recall them and either rebury them rather than just being washed away. To me, this is, it's as important as the Mary Rose, the Vasa, and it's, I've got the ability to dive it so often that I'm actually observing the next deterioration. And I just think it's such a shame, you know, that it's continued washed away. Once they're gone, the items have gone forever.
That's quite depressing, isn't it? Because as you say, this is not an insignificant vessel. And could you just remind our listeners exactly why this is so significant? I know it's a three deck, and I believe it's the remaining one of its kind, but it also had an important journey to make in its life, as I understand.
Yes, it was a Cromwellian built ship. It took part of a convoy that brought King Charles II for his restoration, which the Prince of Wales, who later becomes King James, was on board the London. It was a flagship. It was fully armed, coming out of the Medway to go up to further up the Thames to the Hope to receive the captain. Then it was going to go off to the Second Anglo-Dutch War when it accidentally exploded, killing over 300 people on it.
How did it accidentally explode? Do we have any idea?
No one knows for sure. My theory is, well, we're always coming across clay pipes on the site. The captain wasn't aboard. You had women, wives and children on board who were allowed at this period of time to be on board the vessel for the small journey. Then this arc, then the captain would have been on board. Then it would have been, off for the conflict. So I always say you can imagine when the governor's not around, you know. And according to Samuel Pepys' diary, the day before it was a bitterly cold day. So whether they're down in the hold, you know, with all that gunpowder aboard.
But that means loads of people must have died then. It's also quite a tragic story then.
It really is. Over 300 people died, and we are coming across human remains on our dives as well, which we're, you know, obviously we're respectful about.
No, of course. It's a huge challenge. So your team, are you all volunteering on this? Is this, I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
How many are there of you?
Well, to be honest with you, because of the visibility, we've always got to be connected to a line. So we use our RIB's anchor to go down, because to be honest, the current's horrendous. Then we have to reel off to the wreck, do our monitoring, recording, then come back. And because it's so black down there, we have to keep the divers to a bare minimum because of the distant lines. And to be perfectly honest, we've taken experienced divers, instructors down, and then when we got down to the bottom, they just come up and say, "You're actually mad, you're actually bonkers." But we're used to it. We absolutely love it.
And there's a small matter of, you know, a shipping lane going by you as well. So I just, maybe, have you considered this bonkers one? How deep is it, though? That's the other thing.
It's only 18 metres, but it is the currents. On an hour before high water, our shot line is basically horizontal or near horizontal. But the good thing about it, we get the full support of the Port of London. They actually slow the ships down for us. And we do hear another licensee from the Coronation wreck we took out once, and he wrote in a dive magazine that when a ship comes past, the reverberations of the pellets is like being hit with a cricket bat. My wife always described it like being under a train. But to be honest, we're used to it now. We don't even think about it.
This is just remarkable. It really is. I had no idea the sort of, you know, the challenges that you are overcoming on. And you dive it regularly, don't you? I mean, this isn't just once in a weekend. I don't think I've ever heard a story of so much passion and dedication. It really is amazing. You should. So this is why the authorities need to stand up and smell the roses. And I know that the Nautical Archaeology Society have been helping you, and you've got the Save the London campaign. And how is that all going? Because that's important. We need to advertise that fully, don't we?
Yeah, the Nautical Archaeology, they are fantastic. You know, we do get drips and drabs of money being donated. And they help to pay for our dive expenses, you know, just the maintenance of our boats and our equipment. Obviously, we're doing it for volunteers, so we're not doing it for work. But, you know, it does help, you know, because they thought it was wrong at first that we was paying our own money to try and save this nationally important wreck site. But because we like doing it anyway, but it's so nice. And I say, our CEO of Nautical Archaeology, Mark Beach Edwards, he's fantastic. He's dived the site. And the first dive I took him round the site, he came up and his face... And he was like, language was, "Blimey, Steve," he says, "I'm not jealous of what you've got here." He says, "I'm blah, blah, blah." He said, "It's amazing, Miss Rick." He said, "There's bits everywhere." And he said, "Like, you seem to know every nook and cranny." So it's a privilege to have someone like Mark on board. And we have worked with professional archaeologists when we've done excavation work, and it seems like all the impression I get off all the other professional archaeologists, when we actually see the site, they come up with their faces, and this site is something else. You know, it is something special, because it's a time capsule.
Yeah, I know, and also because it sounds so incredibly well preserved, and because I hear you've got like over 1,000 finds already.
1,200 objects have come up. Artifacts have come up from the site, and it's like the shoes. I like the personal finds, like the shoes have still got all the threads in, like the little rings, the sundial compasses. But like I say, even today, I like the human type, the markings on the wrecks. It's, you can imagine, like, you know, to me, the shipwright, or was these markings, was it a game they played on the decks? Was it where the cannons went? That to me is what I like about archaeology. It's the human side of things.
So I'm not even going to ask you what your favourite find is then. Or maybe I should actually, because the cannon versus some of these more personal artefacts.
Yeah, I think there's too many nice finds. The cannon was nice because it confirmed my theories, but I brought up a little sundial compass, and to me that would have been a rotary watch of one of the officers. Or I've even like found a little wooden clay pipe tamper, what a sailor handcrafted.
So where are all these finds going?
Well, the finds I've messed with. We're not bringing anything up at the moment because until we get permission of Historic England, but all our finds are going to Southend Museum, who are receiving museum for our finds. Because when we first started diving the site and we find this stuff was either out of position or gone, I said, it's mad. Why should we be only people to find these, see these things? The whole world should be. And Historic England was really sympathetic and very... they gave us permission, and I did say it'd be nice to keep our finds local. And Southend Museum offered to be the receiving museums. So they're in their stores at the moment. They have got a small display of our finds, but next year I believe it's going to be a year-long exhibition with all our finds. So I'm excited to see what the museum do.
Absolutely. And what do they do about, have they got conservation? Because presumably some of these things will need conserving.
Yeah, when we was trained by Angela Middleton of Historic England Conservator of how to first do first aid treatment. Then they go off, if it's the funds from the Save of London, if there's any money in the kitty, we'll pay for the conservation at Fort Cumberland, Historic England, Fort Cumberland. The Mary Rose has conserved some of our finds as well. So they get properly conserved and they go back to the museum once there.
It's really nice that it's in a local museum, I think, because then you can make that connection, can't you, between where she worked and operated and the people who appreciate it as their ship as well. Obviously, mostly the team that are excavating it. That's incredible.
It's excavating itself, and that's the sad thing about it. You know, I believe excavation can be destructive at times if it's not done properly. You know, to me, everything's about context.
Yeah, absolutely. But then, oh gosh, it must feel... I think that would be really upsetting when you're just seeing all these things, you know, slowly being... well, not so slowly at all, being eroded, and you can't do anything to sort of make those contacts. Well, you can only do as much as you can because, as you say, you can't do it systematically. Well, it sounds to me like we need to get on our bandwagons and start banging on the government. We've got a new government. Let's see if they'll do something, because, as you say, it sounds like this really is a national treasure, and that there should be attention paid to it. I can't believe that you're having to spend the money that you raised from the Save the London to actually do the conservation. That should be the government's responsibility.
Yeah, well, my attitude is we should be able to just bring this stuff up. If it's not, because I know conservation costs, and the thing is, I've always said about, I don't want to recover, because there's hundreds of barrel staves being washed away, but it's the ones with the markings on what helps me. And you can't... you try to work out what things are at the bottom of the Thames, but you've got such a limited time. But my attitude is, look, if we could just bring it up, record it, then either put it back on the site, or if they do think it's really worth conserving, then conserve it. But not do nothing, to me, is just absolutely crazy, especially when you're trying to work out what the site is. And we don't put the stuff on eBay. We do it for the love of archaeology. So we're not doing it for personal gain, bringing stuff up. And, you know, it just seems crazy. But it's a protected wreck. But what's it actually being protected from?
It just sounds to me like our heritage should be saying thank you very much to Steve and his team, because, you know, despite the challenges you're facing, you are there and you're documenting what you can as best you can. And I think maybe that should be the end of the podcast. Thank you very much, Steve, and your team for doing such an amazing job, because if you weren't there, just imagine what knowledge we'd be, even more knowledge we'd be losing. So that's incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. That is a really amazing story. And I really hope that... this short interview can push even more the visibility of the wreck and you know, raise more funds, because it sounds like you need every penny as soon as possible. So, good luck. Wow, Steve and his team really are national heroes trying to save this national treasure. But clearly, and very regrettably, this process, as Steve points out, that is set in place to protect the wreck of the London, is not working. So I think we can only conclude that the Save the London campaign needs all the support it can get. Thanks to Steve, and thanks to all of you for listening to the Dive and Dig podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports maritime archaeological research in the Eastern Mediterranean. Thank you for listening, and hope you'll tune in again next time. Cheers!